Welcome to Play the Advantage U.S. Men's National Team Podcast. I'm Danny Day alongside Cody Carlson. Cody and I were college soccer teammates, and we are big U.S. Men's National Team fans. This podcast covers everything U.S. Men's National Team related.
And here we are, August of 2021. I am joined by Coach Cody Carlson, as always. Cody, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Danny. How are you?
Doing well, man. It's been a busy last month or so, not just for the U.S. Men's National Team. You got married. Well, you got married during the COVID pandemic, right, officially. Had your celebration this last month, so congratulations again to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. How are you feeling, though? You feeling good?
Oh, it's great. It's been an awesome month. It's been a whirlwind. Had a ton of fun getting married again for the second time. Unfortunately, had to miss a little bit of the Gold Cup action because of that. But, hey, that's all right. That's all right. We're diving back into it. And what a Gold Cup it was, huh, Danny? I mean, CONCACAF, woo! Gold Cup champs, USA beating Mexico for the second time in the span of, what, 30 or 40 days, something like that. I am on cloud nine about it.
Oh, I love it. I mean, it doesn't matter. Team A, Team B, Team C, whatever you want to call this team, certainly wasn't our quote-unquote Team A. But I think that's what Berhalter said. He says that there's no quote-unquote A team. I think we all kind of have a feel for what that might look like. But, you know, he wanted the guys to all get bought into this. And did they ever buy in? I mean, you could see that come out all the way through the tournament, even just the improvement along the tournament, you know, climaxing with the incredible – extra time win over Mexico. It seems to be that when we play Mexico as of late, cup finals, trying to take it all the way down to the wire, and the drama was certainly there.
Yeah, no doubt. And doing it with this roster that we had, yeah, Berhalter's not saying it's our B team or C team or whatever. Of course, he's not going to say that as a coach, but we all know it. I mean, this is an MLS team. Right, the 20 of the 23 guys, I think, are MLS players, right? It's only a few that who aren't. So when I was looking at this lineup, I was going, boy, if we can squeak out some results with this lineup, I'll be happy. And the fact that we were able to win it all, albeit a bit lucky at multiple points throughout the tournament, but ultimately got it done and lifted the hardware again and over our toughest rival in CONCACAF. So it's big time. And, you know, Alexi Lalas was in tears. He was so happy that he said, this means more to me than, you know, the UEFA Nations League win over Mexico because of this group of players. He has some validity to that. I don't know how much you can really believe his tears. They might have just been all for the TV. But
Yeah, you know, Alexi's going to, you know, say what he says, but you know, I think there is a lot of validity in that. And I mean, you can just truly see though. And I think for a lot of us, as many times as we, or many of us question Berhalter and his different decisions, I think we've seen him grow as a coach, even over the course of these last two tournaments and amidst this Gold Cup, making better in-game decisions, making subs at better moments in the games, and actually maybe the best subs that he could make given the roster that he created for this tournament. Not bringing too many wingers, you know, playing Hoppy as a winger, you know, maybe not his, in theory, his best position, but right. Still looking pretty Giacchini, good out there.
Nico Giacchini, yep, played as a winger. Zardes at times played as a winger, but that's because there are only two wingers, true natural wingers for this Gold Cup roster, were Paul Areola and Jonathan Lewis. And thank the Lord that Berhalter did not play Jonathan Lewis much. And Jackson Ewell much at all.
Played both Ewell and Lewis, right, in that first game. And yeah. I think we might have seen Ewell one more time. But then after that, I think Berhalter realized, hey, enough is enough. And it's time to move on to guys who are going to get it done. And
yeah,
we saw that from other guys.
He realized U.S. Men's National Team Twitter is really going to come after me if I keep playing Jackson Ewell and Jonathan
Lewis. I think he's got to be one of those, you know, really anonymous Twitter accounts on there that's just – you know, following all the different guys on, you know, U.S. Men's National Team Twitter, because he would have taken a lot of heat. But yeah. But to the fact that our quote unquote B or C team went and beat all of these teams and finished off beating Mexico in the final. I remember watching earlier on the tournament thinking when Mexico was kind of hitting their stride, maybe it was in the quarterfinals or the semis, Mexico looked really good. And I was thinking, oh, this, I don't think our team can beat these guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
lo and behold, you get to the final and playing with that kind of tenacity, that heart, and just absolute grit and grinding out that kind of a result. And but not just grinding it out, but I mean, finishing with some flair at the end there too. It was exciting and I think really rewarding, not only just to Berhalter and staff, but to all the fans to see all that's gone into these last few years building up to this point and where we're at now. I think it leaves us in a good place going into qualifiers.
Oh, it definitely does. Definitely does. But let's take a quick kind of recap dive back into the Gold Cup and starting with the group stage games.
Please
so
do.
Game number one, we take on Haiti, right, and squeak out a 1-0 result. Sam Vines buries a header, hits the goal for the win. Kind of Zardes is able to kind of flick it up in the air towards the back post, and Vines is actually able to be there to head it home. So I remember, you know, watching that going, all right, Sam Vines, you know, I've had him in our depth chart, right, as a left back. And, you know, when I saw him previously, I was not impressed. And so for him to get a header, it made me go, okay, you know, this is someone that we should definitely be looking at and grooming for that left-footed left back spot, right? So that was the first game, right? Honestly, we should have probably done a bit better against Haiti. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Haiti definitely put up a really tough battle for the squad. And again, first game for this you know, group of guys coming together. So I think they're kind of getting a feel for how they want to play together too. But, you know, I think you got to just mark it down as a win is a win. And then it's especially in tournament format, then you move on to the next one. And you know, Berhalter and the staff are able to go back, watch the film and realize that, hey, you know, Jonathan Lewis may be a great guy and great part of the team, but he's not going to play any more games. And so I don't think he saw any more minutes for the rest. Right. Yeah. And the same thing with Yule. Yule got the start.
Yeah.
To many of our, you know, unfortunately, we didn't feel that was the best decision. Again, Berhalter made adjustments moving forward. And so I think that it was a game where you got the result and you got to really learn a lot about some of the negative aspects of guys that you were like, wow, how are you not performing better against Haiti? You should be performing better here because you're not going to play anymore. So that in a lot of ways, I think, served its purpose in a good way.
Yeah, no, that's a good take. That's a good take. So second game then, group stage, is a 6-1 win versus Martinique.
Okay, this is the Daryl DK game.
Yeah, and DK looked good. He looked like this was the game where we were all hoping to see big man do his thing, right? Mm-hmm, so nice header from a Matthew Hoppe whipped in swinging cross to DK. That was a nice goal. DK then, he causes an own goal. I think they originally marked it as DK's goal, and then they went back to own goal, and I think they twisted
like four or five times.
Yeah, they like kept changing it back and forth, but ultimately I think it was an own goal. But then he scored a nice goal, which, you know, we'll count it 2.5 instead of 3. Almost a hat trick. So
yeah, he got CONCACAF after there. I mean, he really should have had the Hattie, but
yeah.
Yeah,
that was a nice goal. That last one he scored, though, I mean, he took it in the stride, just big-bodied the defenders. I mean, made him look, you know, tiny, and was able to kind of flick it over the oncoming goalkeeper. And I said, okay, big man can play a little bit, too. He's not just all a bull, you know, bull in a china shop. He's someone who occasionally can find some graceful touches and skill, so...
That was fun to see from Daryl DK, and I think many of us have been waiting for this chance that he gets, where he can, you know, get into one of those starting spots for the U.S. men's national team and bury those chances, and finally he has, right? Because that number 9 position for the U.S. is still, for I think many of us, still up for grabs. And I think one of the things that I've learned over the course of this last year as we've started this podcast and started covering the U.S. men's national team is I think that I'm as guilty as anybody, but I am very much maybe have that recency bias. And so yep. I'm thinking after this game, Daryl Dike, clearly there's no – he's our forward. He's our guy.
Yeah.
And then we go to see as the tournament goes on, some of his weaknesses come out, right? And absolutely. So that was –
Well, you got to remember you're playing. He's burying those goals against Martinique. I mean, mm-hmm, I had to mm-hmm. go look at a map to find Martinique. You know,
right?
So, you know, you take those things into consideration, and then
absolutely,
you know, it you know, yeah, we get it sorted out. So, but yeah, I'm sure we'll touch base on that point with the nines as yep. we talk more about Zardes and everything going forward, but let's sure. get back to this. So the just to finish up that Martinique game, so DK was scoring twice and then that own goal as well. Miles Robinson buried a header,
right.
Jesse Zardes scored, and so did Joe Keeney. So
yep.
good to get those guys on the score sheet as well. And then we conceded a PK, so Turner, this was the only goal that we conceded in the whole Gold Cup.
Believe one it or not. Goal conceded the entire
and,
Gold
and
Cup.
And it was a penalty kick. Yep. So if you would have told me that before the Gold Cup started,
would have never believed you.
I would have said, yeah, right. Yeah, right. So, but yeah.
Impressive. I mean, I saw a stat on Matt Turner today that apparently the expected goals against the United States during this tournament was like four more goals basically than what it was allowed. So he stopped, I think it was like 3.5 to 4 more expected goals with what should have been goals for our opponents. And so
that's
the fact
insane.
That he is, and it's like those stats compared to any other U.S. goalkeeper, I guess, are astronomically better than
right.
say a Zach Steffen right. or Ethan Horvath. Again,
yeah.
not that either of those two guys are bad options, because I think we've got yeah. three really good options now, but Matt Turner may just be our best shot stopper.
Well, that was no doubt in my mind anymore that he is our best shot stopper. Now, whether or not he's our best goalkeeper, that is TBD. But I don't think after this Gold Cup, there's no question in my mind, and I think a lot of people's minds that he's the best shot stopper out of Horvath and stuff.
Yeah, well, so. And you know, if you're Berhalter, right, you just got to experience. And I think, I mean, man, this is. Just huge benefit to Matt Turner in a lot of ways, but he just got to be with Berhalter right for about a month or however long it was, 3 weeks. Nice. He's getting to see him every single day, training, games, 6 games yeah. under Berhalter, allows yeah. one PK goal.
Yeah.
If you're Berhalter going into these September qualifiers, I know we'll talk about this more later, but man, you got to think that Berhalter has a lot of confidence in a guy like
oh,
Matt
yeah.
Turner.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't win this whole Gold Cup if Matt Turner's not our goalkeeper. And yep. I'm saying that meaning if Steffen or Horvath or anyone else is in goal, we're not winning this Gold Cup. I stand by that. So yeah. moving on, next game of the group stage was a 1-0 win against Canada, where Shaq Moore scored an early goal. I think it was, what, 30 seconds in or something like that mm-hmm. into the game. And we just hung on to win that game 1-0 and top the group. Mm-hmm. So good to see Shaq Moore get on it, right? And
yeah.
Sebastian Legette played a nice left-footed, you know,
oh, beautiful
right across the 6-yard box, and Shaq Moore there to tap it in on the back post.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Legette was a little up and down throughout this tournament.
Right.
Some you know wanted to see a little bit more from him, especially as one of the leaders on this squad in particular. But a great ball at that moment, just a beautiful. Beautiful pass to Moore, who was there at the right place at the right time. And
yeah.
and that was what did Canada in. I mean, but
yeah.
I got to say, Canada looks scary moving
yep.
forward. I mean, this
yep.
CONCACAF qualifying is going to be tough for the World
it
Cup.
Is.
I mean, you got Canada very much improved, you know, took
yep.
Mexico all the way to the limit. You got Mexico.
Well,
you got
they
us.
Didn't even have, they were missing Io Akinola, who's hurt. So they're nine.
Alfonso
hurt,
Davies.
And Alfonso
Jonathan
Davies.
David.
Yeah, so they're missing some big guns too. So you look at Canada, yep. and you look at the U.S. and Canada and U.S. are on the way up, and Mexico
right.
on the way down. Costa Rica
right.
maybe on the way down. Like
right,
the there's a little bit of a changing of the guard in CONCACAF that's clearly happening. So
oh, no doubt. Well, and you saw El Salvador too, right? With
yeah,
I believe Hugo Perez. No, Hugo. No, am I saying that right? Former American national team player who didn't get a look at the U.S. men's national team coach, is now the coach of El Salvador, has them playing lights out soccer, took Mexico to the brink. Yeah. El Salvador, I believe they're our first qualifying game on the road.
Yeah.
They are going to be tough. I mean, so yeah. There's just going to be no easy game in this qualifying.
Yeah.
You know,
well, they got Roldan's brother, right? They got Christian.
Yeah.
They got Alex Roldan decided that he's not going to play for the U.S. He's going to play for El Salvador.
So right. Right. So we topped the group. What's next?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that helped us because if we didn't top the group, we were going to have a more difficult path. So, quarterfinal game is a 1-0 win against Jamaica, where Hoppy scored late. I think it's 83rd minute goal, header on the back post. And Hoppy's fun to watch, isn't he?
He is. He is not afraid to talk smack to anybody. He's not back down. I mean, you see in that, you know, all the games, really, he was ready to you know, get, you know, chest to chest with anyone. And was
yeah,
fun
he's got
player
that arrogance and that confidence. And, yeah, he's definitely jawing, especially in the Mexico game in the final. He's jawing back and forth and just smiling, and, you know, just winding the opponent up. And
You need your guys.
Yeah, he's
to
got
have
that edge.
At least one or two guys to have that on your team.
Yeah, yeah. So that was good. You know, we got Jamaica, and I think outplayed them for the most part. The first, if you reflect back to that Jamaica game, though, I mean, we almost conceded a goal within the first minute because the ball gets played back to James Sands and he takes his time to launch it up and just a long ball. Mm-hmm. And the onrushing Jamaican, you know, attacker comes in, just like blocks that long ball, and then they scrap and they press and they get a shot, and like could have been 1-0 down in the first minute, like we had gone up 1-0 against Canada in the previous game. So pretty crazy.
We didn't even mention Jamaica, right? They're another incredibly tough opponent. Who we barely edged out in this tournament. Again, this was not our quote unquote A team, but they are going to be a tough out, home and away. They're missing their forward Leon Bailey, right, in this game, who didn't play. There is more talent now across the CONCACAF than I think maybe ever before.
Yep. So we scraped by with another 1-0 victory against Jamaica in the quarters. That puts us in the semis and have to scrape with another 1-0 victory. 1-0 seems to be the
that's our theme, baby. But man, that's a mark of a good team,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. 1-0 against Qatar. Right, so Zardes ultimately pokes
Asian champion Qatar, right?
Who went
and won the, you know, entire Asian Cup championship, you know, in recent times. So this is not a slouch team at all.
No, they surprised me. In fairness to Qatar, I was pleasantly surprised, and I think a lot of folks were overlooking them.
Oh yeah,
and kind of just expecting the U.S. to be able to outplay them and get the job done with ease, but that was definitely not the case. I mean, we were on the ropes for a lot of the game in terms of possession. I mean, they outshot us by a ton. They missed a penalty kick. I mean, if they go 1-0 up on that penalty kick, I don't see us winning that game. That's the way it was working, but we caught our break there with that missed penalty kick, and then we went on to win it. You know, Zardes gets a toe poke in from a Giacchini pass. Both of those guys subbed in to combine for the goal, which was awesome to see.
Giacchini, really good performance in that match too.
Yeah. You know, DK had gotten the start. You know, Zardes comes in and finishes it off. So I think that, you know, tells you a little bit about what we were talking about earlier too with DK, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think we
fading out,
great...
starting strong, doing well in the Martinique game, kind of petering out, right, losing some.
You got
state,
you
got
to think he's going to figure into the World Cup qualifying roster in some form or fashion. Maybe, you know, I wonder how much Berhalter will lean on form, experience, what that looks like depending at that time. But you know, he was great in that Martinique game, then didn't look very good in the Canada game, right?
Yep.
And then didn't look exceptional in the Qatar game. And so Zardes came in and provided the spark that was needed. And obviously, you know, as a guy who Berhalter can lean on and got that finishing touch at just the key moment.
Yep, absolutely. I was stoked. I was thrilled with that one. And so that put us into the final, obviously, in Mexico. Another final against El Tri, man. So we scraped it out with a 1-0 in extra time. Well, double extra time, right? 117th minute.
Yep.
Acosta with a just money set piece delivery and swinging right to Miles Robinson's head, heads it home. Pretty much a golden goal. They had 3 to 5 minutes left of stoppage time or something like that right after that. But we held on for the 1-0 win. And
right.
CONCACAF champs, man, over El Tri. You got to love that.
Yeah, in front of a very pro-Mexican crowd in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. You know, from what the announcers were saying and from what we could tell, you know, it was probably 60-40, 70-30 in favor of Mexico probably in the stands. You know, hard to say exactly, but yeah. Even just that experience for our guys to be playing in that kind of atmosphere, you know, essentially you know, a road atmosphere in a lot of ways, and going out there and getting the result and an incredible result. You know, they finished strong, and that's something that I know Redlands men's soccer always preaches, right? It's finishing strong. And I think Berhalter gave Ralph a call, Ralph Perez, head men's coach of Redlands, gave him a call before the game, and Ralph just said, gave him the motto, right? Finish strong. And that's what U.S. men's national team did every game.
That's absolutely right. I don't know if Greg called Ralph or not, probably not, but Ralph was actually at the game. He was there.
Was he at the game?
Yeah, he was there at the game, and he was there with a group of coaches, and I said, "Coach, you better bring your raincoat just for all the beer that might get thrown on you." And he said, "Yeah, I'm going to bring my red, white, and blue colored raincoat."
That's right. That's right, baby. So,
but yeah, man. So you want to talk over some, you know, takeaways?
Yeah. I think we should. I think one of my big takeaways, for sure, Berhalter has truly grown on me. And as many times as I still get frustrated with him and some of the roster decisions he makes and in-game decisions, I think he showed that he is getting better at in-game tactics, making adjustments in the game, even in the Mexico game, pushing the press up higher at times, finding key moments to do that. Again, this is with the second, kind of our second squad. And the fact that we played that game, while Mexico had many of the good chances in the first half, they didn't have a ton of great chances second half or extra time. So those halftime adjustments, whatever Berhalter was doing, telling his guys to do, they clearly work. So I think it's showing me that the guys are, like we've talked about before, are going to go to war for him. And he's gotten that buy-in from the first team. He's got that buy-in from this group. And when it comes to national team play, tactic or just, you know, the talent level out there is always going to be key. But if you're going to get the guys to just go hard-nosed battle for 90 minutes, 120 minutes in this instance, that might be even one of the more key aspects of what the national team coach's job is to do. And he's clearly shown the ability to get our guys to do that. So I think that has got to be one of my key takeaways, is that I do believe a lot more in Berhalter now to get the job done and hopefully get us through qualifying successfully.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm a Greg fan. Yeah. And, you know, I still think that we can play a little bit nicer football, a little bit more aesthetically pleasing, and building out of the back and breaking lines and combinational play. And, you know, but at the end of the day, I'd rather win. So whatever it takes to win. And that's what our guys showed. So I think this is a perfect building block of our guys are showing, yes, we will do whatever it takes to win. And now the next level of that is bossing teams with possession, is out shooting opponents.
Right.
Is leading in multiple statistical categories and just playing dominant football against opponents in CONCACAF, right? So that's the next level. Because honestly, in these games that we played, you know, certainly against Mexico, Qatar, you know, Canada, like we were outplayed for a lot of the game. And those games could have gone the other way easily. Mm-hmm. Right. So now we squeaked it out, we got it done, and now it's building off of that. But kudos to Greg, kudos to the team, to our guys for just grinding it out and lifting another trophy. It's awesome. That's a good takeaway.
Two trophies in one summer, man.
Both
finals against Mexico. I mean, it really does not get much better than that.
And, could you imagine if we'd have been told that, like, oh yeah, we'll beat Mexico twice in the span of 40 days and lift the trophy, right. Gold Cup and Nations League. You'd have been like, yeah.
You gotta wonder what Mexico's thinking right now. Like, Mexico, first, they didn't beat our A team.
Yeah.
And then they didn't beat our B team. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm surprised we haven't heard about
This might even be a C team that we had.
Might even have been a quote-unquote C team, so, right? So, I mean, man, Mexico, and granted, Mexico had the better of the play for a lot of this game and a lot of really good chances that they could not bury. And they were missing some key guys, too. I mean, this was more of an A team for Mexico than it was for the U.S.
Yeah.
But they were still missing some of their key players, a couple at the Olympics, you know, a couple who were away
Memo
with their –
Ochoa. Yeah.
Right. But
Diego Lainez and Uriel Antuna, they've been at the Olympics, so they weren't on this Gold Cup squad. I mean, but they still
Raul Jimenez, you know, Chucky Lozano was injured.
Yeah, Chucky got injured in that first game of the Gold Cup, right? He took a gnarly knee to the face, to the eye socket.
That was bad. So, so certainly not their first team, but still they had, it was a stat in that final. In the final, it was like 7 or 8 of their guys who started in the Nations League final were also starting that Gold Cup final, which was certainly not the same for the U.S.
No. So who were our only ones? I think Acosta for sure.
Acosta and was there another one?
Yeah. Legette's. Hey, I don't think he started in that Nations League one. In the Nations League final, I don't think he started.
Yeah, anyways, I have to go back and look at that starting lineup, but
it was definitely Jackson Ewell and Jonathan Lewis.
Yeah. Well, let's play a little stock watch, should we?
Yeah.
We'll play a little stock watch. So let's take a look at some different players. Whose stocks in your mind rose and whose stocks dropped? I'll say some names and you let me know your thoughts on them. First, I think let's just start with one who I really like. I want to hear your thoughts though on Miles Robinson. Obviously he scored the game winning goal. What are your thoughts on Miles Robinson?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I suppose his stock rose a bit for me, just because he scored the game winning goal against Mexico, won the championship. He also scored another goal against Martinique, and he was pretty solid throughout the 6 games of Gold Cup, right?
Very solid.
So he, you know, his stock definitely rose. Now, for me, when I'm looking at my depth chart, is he ahead of Mark McKenzie, who started, you know, alongside Jonathan Brooks in the Nations League? I don't know. Is he ahead of Chris Richards? I don't know. Is he ahead of Matt Miazga, Aaron Long? Aaron Long's got a big question mark with his injury.
Right.
So I don't have enough info right now to be able to say that he's ahead of those guys. Now, that being said, am I comfortable with him now in a World Cup qualifying game? Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What do you
think?
Mind, what's your opinion on Miles Robinson, though?
I mean, Miles Robinson, you know, it was interesting because he was kind of – he was very much on my radar a year and a half ago. And then I'm thinking, you know, when Atlanta United didn't release him for the Olympic roster, which was a huge, very detrimental to that Olympic qualifying team, right?
Yeah.
That was brutal because he would have been the linchpin of that defense. Yeah. But man, you see him in this roster, you see him in this camp. He was next to flawless throughout the tournament defensively. Yeah. And you're looking at, who are you going to pair up with, in theory, our starter, John Brooks, at the left center back position? Mm-hmm. You need someone who's going to be agile, quick, can win the headers, but is also, you know, giving good cover defensively, can win your one-on-one duels. Miles Robinson checks all those boxes. And his stock definitely rose for me. And, I mean, I think that, for me, I saw just about all the information and data I needed on him to say, is he my number two, you know, center back behind John Brooks? He's certainly right in that mix with all the other guys. And I would be very comfortable with him starting, and maybe even more so than Mark McKenzie. I mean, and I love Mark McKenzie, and I would be fine with Mark McKenzie as well. But we saw Mark McKenzie have a few shaky moments, right, in some of those games. And so you wonder how, you know, this next month plays out. But I, you know, again, one of those guys, Miles Robinson, Berhalter has got to feel really good about him and very comfortable and assured that, hey, I'm going to put him in the game and he is going to be a rock star for me in the back. Sure. So I think that his stock definitely rose for me.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if it's enough to warrant a, you know, number two spot, but definitely rose. Who's next in the stock watch?
Yeah, so talk to me about Jackson Ewell. What are your thoughts on him?
Jackson Ewell.
I do want to know where you stand on him.
Yeah, I mean, his stock remains neutral, right? No change because he didn't play much.
Right? You think no change?
Well, I mean, no change in the sense that I don't want him playing for us.
Okay, fair.
Yeah. I mean, his stock didn't go down because he wasn't playing, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess if you look at it this way, his stock did go down because Kellen Acosta is the new backup number six if Tyler Adams can't go.
No doubt.
So it's not a fault of Jackson Ewell's, but more of a plus for Kellen Acosta. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think for me, yeah, Jackson Ewell, you're right. In my mind, he was already so low. It's like he couldn't necessarily drop further. But, and again, this is not, I'm sure Jackson Ewell's a great guy, but he just wasn't getting it done. He, you know, sideways or backwards passes, you know, missed passes here and there, couldn't win a tackle. So for me, I think it was very telling, right, that he played that first game and then Berhalter said, sorry, Jackson, you're no longer playing. And if he's not playing in these games in the Gold Cup, I think it's clear that he's probably on the outs now and not going to be in the World Cup qualifying roster.
He's probably outside looking in. I mean, even Gianluca Busio, I think I'm more comfortable having him in as a six over Jackson Ewell.
Yeah. So. Yeah, fair. Yeah, your stock definitely rose on Busio?
Yeah, we're moving on to him. Busio stock increased. And mostly because I hadn't really seen him too much. In fairness to him, just hadn't. I'm not a Sporting KC fan, but.
What about a Venezia fan?
Yeah, now I'm a Venezia fan because of Busio and Tanner Tessman over there. So
right.
But yeah, Busio, he just seems to have a little bit more, you know, explosiveness, a little more quickness, a little more agility and strength and power than Jackson Ewell does. And at the same time, he's not lacking in some technical areas. I mean, so I think he's the same player, except a little faster, quicker, stronger than Jackson. And he's younger. He's 19. And now he's going to go play in Italy. I mean, so I think, stock's definitely increased for Busio.
Yeah, I'm very high on Busio. So I'm excited to see what he does and that experience over in the Serie A. And how he does over there.
Yes, sir.
For sure. I mean, I think, you know, Kellen Acosta, I think for you, me, maybe many, was player of the tournament player of that final game, right? He was incredible against Mexico. I mean, what are your thoughts, right? It was interesting, right? You go back to, I think it was the March friendlies against Jamaica. He had kind of an up and down game. And then against one of our other friendlies there, maybe Northern Ireland, where he had a couple mistakes, and I was thinking, man, Kellen Acosta just—I don't know if he could be the second guy behind Tyler Adams. But I think this is one of the things I've learned too, right? Guys are going to go through their ebbs and flows in their career. Right? Yep. He was with the U.S. men's national team a couple years ago, hadn't been called into a camp, called back in over the course of these past 5-6 months, and really, really, I think solidified his spot as that second number six, or even really potentially a starting number six, you know, given the fact that Tyler Adams may not be able to go every single game.
Right. No, if there's two players for me that were our two best players, right, in terms of stock watch and stock going up, Kellen Acosta is one of them, Matt Turner's the other. But Acosta, for me, answered the question, if McKinney or Adams cannot go, Acosta is the clear choice for the six or the eight spot. And that being said, he might even go ahead of Leggett, or, you know, if Moose is not around, like, I'm okay with a Adams, McKinney, Acosta midfield. Like, Acosta, what he was able to show in this Gold Cup as a leader, as a player was phenomenal. Okay. And so a couple of things, the Mexico game, he was lights out. I mean, he was bossing the game in the middle of the park and capped it off with a fantastic direct free kick.
Oh yeah.
Put it right on Miles' head for the assist. Phenomenal. Okay. So, but actually I'll tell you what, that was not my favorite part of Kellen Acosta.
Okay. Tell me
this tournament. Favorite part of Kellen Acosta was in the semifinal game against Qatar. When Qatar had their penalty kick, it was going to VAR and a lot of, you know, time in between and build up and anticipation and stuff. And Kellen Acosta did exactly what he did in the Nations League final against Mexico. He gets right in there on the PK spot. He gets in the opponent's head. He's just there. He's causing a little bit of problems. Nothing too like chaotic or anything, but he's causing some issues and getting in that opponent's head before that opponent takes the penalty kick. And he does enough, and he wastes enough time, and ultimately the guy skies it over the bar. So I reflect on that and I go, that is shithousing to its finest. That is mind games to its finest. That is next level gamesmanship.
Oh yeah.
And savvy type of play out there.
Yes, that was the word. You can't just
teach, right? So I want Kellen Acosta involved with our top group from here on out.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say that word, savvy. Savvy. Not only was he all over the field making the crunching tackles, making the key passes, winning the headers, the key moments, playing the perfect, you know, free kick, whipped in ball. But man, that mental side and that stuff that it is harder to teach in those key moments, right? Whether it's talking to the opponent, getting in their head a little bit, man, he is. I think his stock probably did rise along with Matt Turner, probably the most of any player. And he is got to be, I mean, if he's not, while he may not be a starter with a full strength A team, the fact of the matter is we're probably not always going to have a full strength A team.
Right.
So he'll probably find himself in a number of starting lineups over the course of these next 9 months.
Yeah. And I'm fine with that. I think I'd be happy with that. So,
yeah, totally. So you mentioned Matt Turner, and we talked about, you know, him, Stefan Horvath earlier, but so Turner, you feel very highly on him. Do you think he's your number one now?
Yeah, I'm a little wary of recency bias, as we kind of touched on. It's a real thing.
It's a real thing, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and then just wait until we see Horvath or Stefan just do something insane.
After that 30 minutes that Horvath played, I said, hey, he's clearly in my number one. Yeah, yeah. Totally recency bias. Now I'm like, well, maybe Matt Turner.
Yeah. Well, you know, we call this champagne problems, right? Where you got multiple players who could do the job, and you're not going to make a bad decision if you pick one over the other. Right. So, man, I am wary of recency bias, but I think I am leaning more into the Matt Turner camp where, I mean, ultimately I want my goalkeeper to do one thing, the most important thing, keep the ball out of the net. And Matt Turner can do that better than Stefan and Horvath.
Oh, yeah.
So if he can do the most important thing that a goalkeeper needs to do better than the other ones, why shouldn't he be in?
So yeah.
I just keep reflecting on that. Curious what you think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that his stock certainly rose. I mean, he's shown to be the U.S. men's national team's best shot stopper. And the analytics show that, the stats show that, and the eye test shows that.
Yep.
His feet scare me a couple of times, but that could be said for any of our three goalkeepers, realistically.
Yeah.
So he had the one moment, I'm trying to remember which game, was it in the final, where he took that heavy touch and then he almost followed through, but then held back. I think it was pretty early on in the Mexico game, actually. And they were appealing for a PK. But he clearly did not make contact, or there wasn't really much of any contact. But with that being said, None of our top three goalkeepers are necessarily great with their feet. So yeah. I think then at that point you have to say, okay, well, what are we going to value? Knowing that we want to use our goalkeeper for possession, but I think you can get away in some ways.
No, but that's not a secondary thing.
Right, but that's not what I'm
primary
saying.
Primary thing is keep the ball out of the net.
Right.
Tim Howard couldn't build out of the back very well, but he was named the Secretary of Defense after that World Cup game against Belgium. So
I think that knowing that we want to build out of the back, all three are probably about the same with their feet. Zach Steffen may be a little bit better, but the fact of the matter is that you got to have someone who can stop shots. And it seems like at this point, Matt Turner is that guy. Again, Ethan Horvath, we still don't really have enough data on him, unfortunately. Yeah. But I think we know now that Berhalter is going to absolutely trust Matt Turner. And Steffen, over the course of this next month, probably isn't going to play because Man City has already got their number one goalkeeper. And so that's going to be a problem. I don't want to throw Steffen into goal and when he hasn't played for a month, and Matt Turner's been playing it day in, day out. Yeah. And that's, and we saw Steffen with some mistakes in the Nations League.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But it is nice to have that depth and that comfortable. I'd put in any of those three guys and be okay for World Cup qualifiers.
So. No doubt. Now, what about another guy here? How about Matthew Hoppe?
Hoppe. Stock definitely went up for Hoppe. You know, it's great to see him, in a first look, really, for the U.S. national team. We had seen him for Schalke, right? And doing his thing in the Bundesliga, but
hope he gets a transfer out of there, man.
Yeah, I hope so too. Hope so. we saw him as a left winger mostly, which maybe isn't
out of necessity, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, same with putting Giacchini out there and Zardes or whatever. But he's definitely someone to watch. Now, is he breaking into our nine spot? I mean, is he up there with Sargent and DK and Zardes or Sibachu, Pifolk, Giacchini in there as well? Like, hard to say. I don't think I have enough data on him or info to make that opinion and say that. I mean, for me right now, If I got to win a World Cup qualifier, I'm taking Jesse Zardes and I'm taking Josh Sargent for sure. And then I'm taking either Daryl DK or Pifok, I think. So Hoppe might be on the outside looking in right now.
Yeah.
So, but that being said, he's still so young and his attitude, his cockiness, he's
got some swagger, man.
Yeah, he's going to be all right. And, if he doesn't make a World Cup qualifying roster, you can bet with his personality, his attitude, that's going to drive him to just, chip on his shoulder, do everything he can to get better, and then force himself into the team.
Right. Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think that his stock certainly rose, and it's fun to see him for a more extended period of time. Yeah, playing out of position, but, I mean, he still looked quite good out of position. He's in theory a nine, but who knows? Maybe Berhalter brings him because he does have that flexibility and can play wide, right? Because you're not going to see a Daryl DK out wide. You're not going to see a Jossi Zardes out wide. But Hoppe showed that he has that ability to play out wide. Now, is he playing in front of Reyna or Pulisic or any way Aronson? Not at this point in my mind, but. De La Fuente, a lot could change over the course of the next month, right? But, our guys who we're going to see in September, it's not, like we've said, it's not going to be the same roster all the way through to October, November, January. All these different qualifying games we have, right? It's, 14 games in the span of 7-8 months, like that. And so it's going to be a whirlwind of qualifiers, two or three in each of them. So I think he finds his way into one of those World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too.
Yeah.
Who else you got? Yeah. Stock watch.
Yeah, maybe just a couple more. And we'll go with the nine theme. I mean, it sounds like let's just go Giassi Zardes and Daryl DK maybe at the same time here.
Sure. Yeah. DK probably neutral for me. like didn't increase the stock too much.
Yeah.
Didn't decrease it. I was hoping that he would force himself into like, yeah, it's between him and Josh Sargent and leave
right.
Zardes out. But then Zardes comes along, and honestly, I think Zardes' stock increased more, just like getting the big time goal against Qatar. Like he gives everything for the shirt, right?
He
like
does,
he's limited, yeah. But like, not that DK doesn't, but I just think like Zardes a little more experience, maybe.
And he seems to hold the ball up better than Daryl DK does.
Yeah,
DK, yeah, I was a little concerned actually with his ability to hold the ball up. I was surprised that, man, maybe he just had a couple of off games on that fact. But Zardes clearly to me showed the ability to do that better than DK did. And so
what
with the
think?
Way that the US wants to use that nine, they're going to need someone to hold the ball up. So
yeah.
And again, maybe not every game, but it's funny because I had not had Zardes ahead of DK, but you know, he might have inched his way ahead of DK at this point, you know, depending on, again, it may depend on the opponent too. So that could be a factor.
Yep, for sure. Well, I think about if you got to go down to El Salvador to play, do I want to bring Daryl DK or do I want to bring Zardes? I think right now I want to bring Zardes. You know, just experience factor, I think, and all that. So, and like the things you were just saying. Ability to hold the ball up a little bit more, and but yeah, we'll see, man. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any other guys. If you had any other guys you wanted to make sure we touched on before we closed out this, just specifically talking about the guys who are in this Gold Cup camp.
Yeah, James Sands was an interesting one. I had not seen him play very much until this, and he's someone to keep an eye on for sure. Could he be a six? Could he be a center back?
Right.
What's his best spot? I mean, he's touted as a ball playing center back, right? Or someone who can connect his passes and has nice passing completion rate and accuracy and all that. But then he's very limited athletically and defensively. I mean, so against Qatar, he had a nightmare. I mean, gave the ball away and conceded a PK, and he was shocking. I was like, get this guy out. Like, we need to get this guy out. I'll play with three in the back, Greg. Sands is going to cost us. And then he goes with Sands in the final against Mexico, and Sands, I thought, played lights out for the most part.
Yeah,
and so I was
only
really,
had like one or two moments.
Yeah, so I was really impressed with that, the ability for him to rebound. And just short-term memory and shake
good
off
mentality.
That Qatar semifinal, you know, where he botched it basically and was shocking, and to turn it around and play lights out and shut out El Tri in a CONCACAF Gold Cup final. I was pretty impressed with that. So he's only 20. I mean, this is someone that we got to be watching as well and seeing how he develops. So curious what
you think
on James Sands.
I think, was very also just I think very impressed by him on the whole. Had some bad moments in the tournament, which, you know, maybe to be, you know, for some guys at this age, you know, is to be expected. It's that ability to rebound it and that mentality that he had. I think his upside is very high. I imagine that he's probably going to be getting some looks from Europe. And there's already rumors out there in terms of different leagues looking at him at the moment. He's going to be another one of those young guns who's going to be going over to Europe and getting experience at an even higher level. So I think that while he may not necessarily factor into a ton of our World Cup qualifying games, he could be one to keep an eye on, I think, as we go forward here. I think just the center back and with that being said, he may be like our third six at this point. Behind Adams and Acosta, because Busio in there too, right? Yeah, the Sands is going to be Sands over Busio. See, I'm not sure how Berhalter really see him more as a center back or as he see him as a six, but he played center back because they had so few center backs available.
Right.
So I think he's a guy we got to keep our eye on for sure.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. The other two that I want to bring up, and we talked a little bit about Sam Vines, but George Bello. So the two left-footed left backs, you know, Sam Vines is only 22, I think, and George Bello is only like 19. All
Bello,
right, so
man.
George Bello
Berhalter
started
starts
against
him.
he started against El Tri in the final, man, and he did all right. So
Yeah, he was very good defensively.
So
Yeah, he had
that
one moment where he like should have he was on the break, should have probably passed it. I think I forgive him for that, but yeah, I remember his name was Areola. I'll say real quick on Areola, his stock for me dropped. He had what, the one off the post in the first half that he should have buried. He had one in the second half that I don't know how he missed, but he was like 2 inches from the goal and somehow got that shot blocked. He seems to always do the hard work and goes 1,000% to put himself in the right spot, but cannot finish the ball. So if Berhalter continues to bring him in, it's going to just really frustrate me. But
Well,
I mean,
be prepared for that,
oh, I'm sure he will.
because we got, you know, we got Tim Weah, Gio Reyna, you know, Aronson, De La Fuente, Morris, Matthew Hoppe. I mean, those guys.
Yeah. But
But
anyway, yeah,
Areola is going to be in that mix for sure.
I did,
But
yeah, I did like Bello though. I think that
yeah.
he showed, I think, a lot of promise there. I mean, again, the left back spot is one of our quote unquote weaker spots for the U.S. men's national team, right? You got Robinson, who I think we all pencil in there right now, but he's not perfect either. And so you're looking at Vines and Bello maybe as a potential backup. And Vines, I don't know. He never really has shown me that this is the guy. So Bello, I'm not. It'll be interesting to see what Berhalter thinks if Bello maybe does have an inch forward after that final.
I'm curious to see. I mean, for me, those two, Sam Vines and George Bello, are even with each other. So it'll be interesting to see how they continue to develop. I still think it's Anthony Robinson is our clear left-footed left back on that side if we're trying to win a meaningful game, in World Cup qualifying or whatnot. But you know, previously it had been, you know, in fairness to Vines and Bello, their stock has gone up. I think they've gotten better since the last time I saw them, because before when I saw them, I was going, hell no. I'd rather put Sergiño Dest over on the left side and play a different right back, whether it's Reggie Cannon or DeAndre Yedlin or whoever, instead of going with Vines or Bello. Now, after this game, I mean, after this CONCACAF Gold Cup, I've seen them improve, Bello and Vines. So which is great to see, because we do need that depth there. Hopefully we get to a point where if Anthony Robinson isn't the guy, then we're not like forced to put Dest over there, and we can still play with the Vines or Bello and feel comfortable with
Agreed.
that. But I'm not there yet. I think still if Anthony's not able to go, then I still put Dest over there, because I'm still not sold on Bello or Vines. And if we're playing someone who's, you know, a very tough opponent, so.
Yeah, speaking of right backs, how about Shaq Moore? We haven't really talked too much about him,
Shaq
but man,
Moore,
he had
man,
quite the tournament.
he did. He was fun to watch. I thought he did well. You know, the issue that he's in though is there's so many right backs on the U.S. men's national team pool: Sergiño Dest, Reggie Cannon, DeAndre Yedlin, Shaq Moore, Brian Reynolds.
Forgot about
Who
Brian Reynolds.
else
Jeez.
am I missing? I mean, it seems like there's a new right back every other week. The
Well, we didn't talk
U.S.
about
can just pump up,
Julian
pump.
Araujo.
Yeah,
Araujo, who is, maybe,
leaning
thinking,
towards
gosh,
El Tri, maybe.
he might be thinking that's a better opportunity for me to play there. I'm going to go there. But I mean, Shaq Moore, I think in my mind, I didn't have any data on him, so his stock could only go up or down. So, but obviously it went up for me. He had a great tournament,
Yeah, I thought
and
so
gives
too.
me confidence that he could step into a World Cup qualifier and do well for us. I mean, these teams we saw in the Gold Cup are more or less a lot of what we're going to see in these qualifying games, right? And so, they were not all complete teams. As we mentioned, Canada was missing 3 to 4 key players, Mexico missing key players, Jamaica, everyone was probably missing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys. But Morris, you know, stuck his foot in there, played well, scored that, you know, a key goal against Canada, obviously. And I think that that right back pool is so deep now, but it would be hard for me to say that he, you know, he may get included in World Cup qualifying rosters.
Yeah. I'd be okay with him. I mean, clearly he demonstrated it against CONCACAF opponents in this Gold Cup, so I'd be okay if he's playing, you know, down in El Salvador or Jamaica or whoever it may be. So,
yeah. Yeah, man. Well, so speaking maybe to some other guys, I know we're maybe finishing up here in the next few minutes, but, you know, you look at Conrad De La Fuente, who we referenced earlier, just gets his first start really at the top level now, right? He's made the transfer over
to Marseille.
Looks fantastic, just electric out there, gets an assist leading their comeback. Probably could have had two assists if his team had finished off a little bit better at, you know, the raving reviews on his first performance, you know, really in his first chance to really showcase himself.
Yep.
So, gosh, you know, he had kind of fallen off the radar. Now he's definitely got to be back in and playing in a top five league.
Yep.
And then you look at Reyna too. New coach there, Marco Rose at Dortmund, right? Has him playing as kind of an eight. And granted, they're playing a third tier German team. But from everything I read about the game yesterday, apparently Reyna is just looked like a whole step above from where he was even last year. And moving into a little bit more of that central sort of role. Granted, he drifted out left a little bit, but I'm wondering, do you think, I mean, because Reyna is obviously a versatile player. I mean, and so is Pulisic, right? And who's shown that versatility to go more centrally. How do we get the best out of those two guys who are our best two players? How do we get the best out of those two guys to lead us to a World Cup?
Yeah.
I mean, is it out wide or do we move him more centrally? Is it free flowing? I don't know. As you know, Coach Carlson, what would you do with those two guys? How do you get the best out of them?
Man, it's a ever-changing kind of question, you know,
right?
Because sometimes you see Pulisic, he's a natural left winger, and he's at his best when he receives the ball wide left and he takes people on and makes stuff happen, where he cuts inside, gets a shot, takes it to the end line, cuts back for assists, you know, that kind of stuff. But then you see him sometimes as a 10 and he's just is absolute chaos for a back line when he's driving right at them, right? So I still think right now, if I had to play tomorrow, I still go with Reyna on the right wing and Pulisic on the left wing and probably Josh Sargent as the nine. And then it's just allowing Reyna to come inside and Pulisic to find moments to come inside underneath Josh Sargent. But then, and especially Gio Reyna as a right winger, allow him to come inside. And now we overload the central of the park and have four central midfielders, and that allows our right back, Sergiño Dest, to do what he does best, get up into the attack on that right flank and make stuff happen there. So, really curious to see how Gio plays for Dortmund this season, if he's going to be more of a central guy or a winger. But, you know, these are good problems to have, right? These are good problems to have. And always good to have players who can play in multiple spots, especially if they're your best players, right? So,
and that
forces our opponents too. You know, next time we play someone in CONCACAF, they're going to go, shoot, is Berhalter going to play Reyna inside, or is he going to play him as a winger? Is Pulisic going to be on the left wing, or is he going to play underneath? You know, so what are they going to do? We'll find out, right? So that question mark on scouting reports against the U.S., that's a good thing for us.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think that versatility is going to be good because they're not going to be able to just game plan for one thing necessarily. And one final thought on some of our guys who are over in Europe, and feel free to add on any, but Josh Sargent, right? I think traveled over to Norwich today to do his medicals, and I think impending, probably maybe announced tomorrow or Tuesday, his move to Norwich City, you know, a team that's just been promoted to the Premier League.
Yep.
You know, they're paying a good sum of money for the guy, $13 million, 11 million euros. You know, how are they going to use him? Does he factor into their starting lineup? Probably not right away, since he's just arriving. But if he could gain a starting spot on a Premier League team, you know, he can perform. Man, how much that could do for him?
Yeah, that would separate him. For me, he's already our number one nine. But if that, if he could do that, that would separate him from the pack of the Zardes, DK, P-Falk, Jacquini, Hoppy. Right.
Right.
That would put Sargent even further ahead for me.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'd have to agree with that there. I mean, I think it is such a jumble at the top right now with so many guys really trying to compete and get that starting spot, that number nine. And I'm really hoping that Sargent can find that breakthrough, because I think that he can be the guy. So it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, man, it's an exciting time for U.S. Men's National Team. Any final thoughts you got?
No, man, I was just stoked on these championships we've won over the last 40 days or so, especially over our rival. And looking forward to September qualifiers, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be right around the corner. And we will definitely be breaking down information for everyone when we get to that point. But until then, go USA.